You are listening to the Hospice Chaplaincy Show, a show where we talk about psychospiritual and psychosocial aspects of end-of-life care. And now, here is your host, Saul.
Thank you very much for joining us on this episode of the Hospice Chaplaincy Show. I'm Saul Ebema. My guest today is Julie Spears. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. So happy to be here. It's a privilege.
Julie, where did you grow up?
Well, all over for the first few years of life. And then I settled in Dothan, Alabama when I was about 10 years old. I've moved 26 times. But Dothan is pretty much where I remained.
So what were your earliest experiences of loss?
Probably the earliest experiences of loss was we moved so much. And so just friends and family and parents, my parents got a divorce when I was six. And I don't think that I ever really had that parental kind of fulfillment. And so I think there was always loss there, like loss of that comfort from a mom or loss of that comfort from family. So it was very much an isolating childhood.
How did you cope with that?
I did a lot of dreaming of what a family would be like. Unfortunately, I didn't have like TV or a phone growing up. And so a lot of it was through music. And I was the wife of Duran Duran, one of the band members on Duran Duran.
Yeah.
And so I just did a lot of dreaming, you know? And I did all the way through high school. I would just dream. And my dreams were so small, which kind of has given me even, you know, something, a bigger vision today than what I ever thought could be possible. So,
you know, you speak about something really powerful, the role of escapism, you know, finding ways to escape, whether it's just mentally to help us cope with what we are dealing with now. But you asked to come on the show to share some your tough experiences. I'm trying to understand even how to ask the question. But could you share your story?
Yeah, so I guess my story would be, you know, talking about my childhood dreams, why I got that dream, which was to have a family. I got married. I had two children, two boys. I was told I would never have children because I had to have a kidney removed at a young age due to endometriosis. And so the doctor was like, the chances of you having children are slim to none. So I got pregnant. Not only did I get pregnant, but I got pregnant with Zach when I was on birth control pills. And so from day one, I was like, this child has been brought to me for a reason, you know, but never knowing what to expect. And so starting about a young age, I got a divorce when he was about nine, and probably about 10 years old, behaviors started really changing. And, you know, not having that parental background, I didn't really know what to do. I didn't know. I took those problems by myself because the way I was raised, I could do it all and there was nobody that could stop me. And if nobody listened to me, I was going to make them. And unfortunately, through just a hard few years at the age of 16, Zach was in a car accident. He was drinking and at the age of 16 bought alcohol at a gas station and they knew that he was underage. There was no consequences. But the worst part about that is I had been trying to get Zach help through mental health and just rehab and with talking to counselors. I mean, like begging, like calling the state, calling different people and saying, I need help with my child. I'm going to lose him. And because of the child right laws, at the age of 14, he was able to make his own healthcare choices. So when the accident came, it was just like, I mean, I had fought so hard, you know, to save his life because I knew. And then the accident came in and I couldn't, there was nothing I could do. It was quite tragic. It was a tragic accident. It was a John Doe for about 24 hours and I didn't even know. And he was 16 and so cute, the cutest little kid. If you met him, you would just love him because he lit up every room he walked in. If he didn't light up the room, then you knew he was in the room.
It was a special boy. The loss of a child, you know, seems totally out of order because as parents, our hope is that our children bury us. And when it becomes totally out of order like that, how do you even handle the news?
You know, I would have told you before today that I would not have handled the news. Mm. I always said, you just have to put me in a mental institution. And there were days, there are days still that I think I need to go visit, but it is, God wrapped me up. Like from the moment that call came and I fell, because literally it's like I fell to the floor and just peed all over myself and I stayed on the floor. Like I couldn't get up. It was like like God just put this blanket over me. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where it's like, you can just embrace it or you can push it away. And I think I didn't have any energy to push. I just had to lay there and sit in it. And I did for a long time.
Mm-hmm. You know, you received a phone call that many parents dread. I have a son, he's 18 years old and is in constant trouble. And you just feel like that phone call could come, you know, anytime. It's really hard to deal with those phone calls like that shatter your entire world. How did you begin to put the pieces together?
Oh, it took a long time. I searched for a few years, you know, first I dove into work because that was really all I knew to do. I dove into work and found the sunset and the sunrise. And I think that's where God and I really started talking. I'd always been like a believer, but I had never like surrendered and said, okay, I give it to you because I don't know what to do. Mm. I don't even think I knew how to do that, as crazy as that sounds. But through the sunset, I think that's really what started conversations, you know? And I dove into work, dove into sunsets. And at top of COVID, I lost my job, a 20-year career in the dialysis industry as a senior leader. And I had given it all. Like, I think I loved my job more than I loved my family. And then after Zach's accident, I was like, oh my gosh, I had given my job more than I gave to my family, you know, because he would say, Mom, come take me in. And I'd say, I'd be there in a minute. Yeah. I'd finish working on that spreadsheet, go back in there to check on him. He'd be asleep, you know, and those things kind of, you know, it's like, what is the priority? And I think I just got angry at work. I got angry at life and they offered another position. I'm like, I'm out. Peace out, Boy Scout. And I paced the floor for 8 months because I didn't know what to do. Like, what do you do now? And that was at the time I could not find any support groups for child loss. Everything was about either hospice or cancer or widows. And I'm like, I need somebody who understands me.
Yeah.
Couldn't find anything. And so I just started reaching out and trying to figure it out myself. And I could not find out every doctor I would go to, they'd try to give me another pill or give me another diagnosis. And I'm like, I've lost my child. I'm not depressed. I've lost my child. You know, you can't just give me a pill for this. It's not helping. Yeah. And then it was almost like I was feeling like there was something wrong with me because 6 months later, the doctors are giving me this diagnosis of prolonged grief. And I'm like, well, yeah. Can you help me? Tell me what to do? And nobody could tell me. So I just started studying the biology of trauma and overwhelm myself and how to soothe like a traumatic experience. Like people would talk about what happened when individuals go through different kind of trauma or how it erupts the entire body. Like I had no idea what grief does to the body. And the more I learned, the more I understood who I was, the more I wanted to find that what they call healing or even I just wanted to be able to wake up and be okay getting out of the bed. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted to know how to love people again. And it took all the energy that I had to take care of myself. And I felt so selfish. And this actually taught me that the more I take care of me and I love me and the more I give me to God, that the more beauty and the more gifts in life I find. And that's what I did. So I just dove everything I could into understanding trauma, understand the biology of the body. And, you know, people always said it takes 30 days to develop a habit. No, I say it takes a lifetime sometimes. It's yeah. Taken me years to like get into it because you fall off that wagon and you're just starting all over again. And so I've learned to give myself support and just resources and safety. And it's been a beautiful thing.
You know, Julie, listening to your story, and I want us to sit a little bit in that trauma because when I see you, I see a little bit of me. To go through trauma and Because trauma shatters your entire life, your entire worldview, even how you see the world changes. You know, everything is broken into pieces. And it's highly commendable that in that chaos, you are still able to find your bearing and find some resources to regain a sense of balance. It's quite incredible.
Mm. Thank you. So, you know, I told you that, you know, growing up, no phone, no TV. So, of course, all through high school, I had very few friends. I was a loner and, you know, I had to walk to school. So I hid a lot, made fun of. More of it was me internally, you know,
yeah.
Like I saw the world as a bad place. It was me who shot in because of just the things that happened. It wasn't a worldly thing. It was inside. It was real. It was real to me.
Yeah.
So dealing with that all the way through the, you know, through to here, what happened is after Zach's loss, I got to experience love probably for the first time, like true, genuine love. Mm. One of those friends that I had in high school set up like a secret sister account. I had no idea though. And so from right after Zach's accident, I started receiving small, just simple, but boxes, letters, cards, and she had a group of girls and they all got together and did this for me. And I didn't know who it was for a year. And then, but that did more for me than anything. It was like seeing all the work, all the extra stuff that, you know, because at that time to me, before then, I would have been like, oh, it's just a box they put in the mail. Oh, but in the energy that I did not have, it was like I was able to see the time that it took for them to get up out of their bed, to leave their day, to go shop for me and to pick stuff out for me and to intentionally write letters and package them and mail them. And it just, it wasn't so much the gift, but it was the act of the gift and all that it took out of them to serve me. And it was just a beautiful thing.
Yeah. It's good. It really is good to have those social support systems because this grief isolates you. It makes you feel totally alone. It corners you. That's why many people try different mechanisms to cope, whether it's drugs or alcohol or anything, because you feel almost it's like you against the world. And to have people willing to break through that wall and reach out in their own way to remind you that you're not alone. That was really, it's powerful, it's really good. How did your other son deal with this loss?
We don't talk about it a lot. He doesn't talk about it a lot. At first, when he would call, if I was crying, I would just suck it up, you know, and now when he calls, he's like, hurry, and I'm like, well, I'm having a Zach moment, and we either, you know, just usually we move on. He doesn't tend to talk about it, but I've gotten bold and just said, I'm not hiding my feelings anymore. And that really has almost given us freedom to share that we have those moments, but we don't have to like sit in them. You know, we can just have tears and then go about the day, even if it's tears in our smiles. And a lot of times it's happy tears, but they're still tears, you know?
Yeah. With that, we'll take a little break again. My guest is Julie Spears. She's a grief specialist. We'll be right back.
Continuing to be a leader in the field of spiritual care at the end of life, Hospice Chaplaincy provides high-quality professional development webinars that will improve your practice of spiritual care at the end of life. Check out our latest webinars at www.hospicechaplaincy.com.
I'm Sole Behrman. We continue our conversation with Julie Spears. Before the break, we spoke a little bit about the isolation that grief causes. Can you expound more about that in terms of how that meant for you?
I think you know, when you said grief is isolating, it is because it's such a unique individual experience. And for all of us, there, you know, we're like, she doesn't understand. There will never be anybody who can understand our unique individual experience. And sometimes that isolates even the best of us. I know for me, what I have learned is that when I isolate is so usually I do, I will take from, you know, a few months, Zachary's accident was in September. So I find that in the past few years, from September probably to the new year, I am just like a basket case. High anxiety. I call it that I throw up on everybody, meaning like if it's a holiday or a birthday, I'll go and I'll do all kinds of things. Like I got to make it right. Well, then when everybody gets in the door, I'm just like snappy and it's not fun for me or anybody else. And so I made the decision that I'm going to embrace my isolation and find what's healthy and what's not. And sometimes I think that we need that time to just rest in our grief and to just rest in God's arms and just to share with him like the true burdens on our heart and why we're isolated or what, you know, like I would pray for, I used to pray for new friends, like, please show me where to go to find friends, or please tell me how to dress. And it's not what you're dressing, it's how you wear it. And so, you know, if there is somebody that's listening, that's like me, that was so far into isolation, like, how do I even begin to live my life? What do I do today? Then start asking, because it might be something as simple as get up out of the bed and open your blinds. For me, this season, I rested in grief from November until just a couple weeks ago. I did work though, but then my husband's like, enough is enough. We're going to get up and start making the bed. And that one simple act really did a lot for me. So sometimes there's healthy and there's non-healthy.
Yes, you're right. You really articulate, you know, because in isolation, sometimes you don't want to hang out with anybody. You just want to sleep probably. So it can easily lead to a sense of depression. But also there's a solitude where you're like, okay, let me take this moment as a moment of solitude to just reflect over my life, to reflect over my experiences and the steps I need to take to move forward. And it looks like in those moments of solitude, you are able to seek comfort in God and then in the process reflect on ways to move forward and to heal. That is really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not my plan, his plan. Because if it had been my plan, we wouldn't be here today.
So,
my plan is over.
So for somebody who is listening to this episode right now, to our conversation, who is going through the loss of a child, what advice do you have for that person?
Don't let it out. Don't hold it in. Grief is body stricken. It affects the microbiome. It affects the mitochondria. It reroutes your DNA. It affects your organs. It can cause disease beyond your wildest imagination. It affects, for a lot of women, it affects the pelvic floor area. And so they're unable to have intercourse anymore. Like, it is that traumatic because, you know, everybody is so different. But what happens is everybody's when they go through a traumatic event, and it doesn't even have to be the child loss. Trauma is trauma. The event is the event. So yeah, I would say feeling is healing, which is really, really difficult. But I think that was the change in my life, was to say, okay, I can't. It's either I have to choose. So I was trying to get out in the community. Like, I'm trying to do good. And somebody asked me a question and I basically said, well, I'm just waiting to die. Like, I'm just going to do the best I can until I get to go see Zach. Hmm. And she said, well, what if you tried living until you get to go see Zach? And I was just like, huh, what if I did? So, I mean, I used to spend like a few hours talking to friends on the phone, and it was like, okay, well, if I'm going to seek their advice, what if I gave God all this time and started talking to him like he was my BFF? So I do. And I mean, it's just really changed the conversations and how I think about things. And it just became, here's how we need to do the rerouting.
It's really powerful that in this moment, God became your BFF. When I was dealing with my grief, somehow I hated God, because while my parents were being tortured, were praying to God for a miracle, and I felt like God did not come through. So when people would come and say, you know, trust in God and all this, I just didn't want to hear it. I hated God so much. Years later, now I became a minister, right? So things change. But in that moment, I could not find comfort in God. But there were other people, you know, there were therapists that came and provided counseling. It's okay to seek for counseling. It's okay, because some people feel like counseling is for, you know, they have something against counseling. But yeah, counseling is a good resource. If you're listening to this and you're dealing with trauma caused by grief, I encourage you to seek out counseling. Reach out, like Julie said, reach out to people. People are always willing to help. Sometimes people will come to you, and sometimes it's okay to reach out. You know, reach out to your friends. Avoid being isolated unless you're seeking for solitude to reflect on your life. But reach out. There are many resources in the community. There are many support groups in the community. Please reach out, because grief is hard work. What are your thoughts, Julie?
I think you're spot on. I think you're spot on. Grief is the hardest job I've ever had.
Yeah.
And I cannot do it alone. I've always been able to do everything on my own. I've never needed help in my entire 50 years. Mm. And today I need help just getting through the days since the accident. That was a hard lesson to learn. And I would say, if you are somebody who is trying to change, sometimes your hope is for through other people. Like, I would pray, because I couldn't go shopping anymore, just because it was such a, and that to me was a traumatic situation, to have to go shopping in a store where I had to see kids' clothes raised to buy Zach's clothes. You know, like, that was just difficult for me. And so I would pray, God, I pray for somebody where I can buy their clothes, you know. And it seems so silly, but I've actually found that girl now. And the other day I was like, thank you. Like, this is what I found. It took me a minute to even realize that's who she was. But there's so many different things. And I think there's difference in a coach and a counselor. So I want to, you know, there's counseling where you talk it through, where you rehash, where you dig in the past, and you know, maybe you try to identify what some traumatic events were, or what some triggers are, you know, and you want to talk through that. On the other side of it, I work with trauma coaching, and trauma coaching is more of, how do we go forward from right here?
With that, we'll take a little break and we'll be right back. My guest is Julie Spears. She's a grief specialist.
If someone you know is suffering from mental health issues and could use some support, please call the National Alliance for Mental Illness Helpline. It is a free nationwide peer support service, providing information, resource referrals, and support to people living with a mental health condition. To contact the NAMI Helpline, please call 1-800-950-NAMI. That's 1-800-950-6264. Monday through Friday, or send an email to info@nami.org.
I'm Sole Behrman. We continue our conversation with Julie Spears. Let us talk now, transition to the aspect of finding meaning. You went through a traumatic death experience of losing a son, a child, at 16, right? How have you found meaning through this loss?
It's taken a little while. I had to search for it. Really, I didn't even know what meaning was. Meaning, dreaming, living. I didn't know. I was just 8 to 5, you know, push and grind day to day. And a lot of it was asking and finding the sunset. I started paddleboarding, which kind of really gave me meaning, because that's where I could just find some rest. Mm-hmm. And then, because I was a kidney coach for so long, I thought, well, I can take coaching to the board. My intention was to take that time and start more kidney disease coaching, just because it's diabetes and hypertension. I'm like, I can really make an impact, 1 in 3 in the world, you know? Well, somehow that kind of switched into learning more about that trauma and the biology of trauma in our system. And so that kind of led me to putting it on the paddleboard. So I started taking people out on paddleboard tours and offering coaching from the paddleboard here in our local town. Well, that turned into a grief retreat. So I had a retreat at a house on the beach. We hosted 11 women. They were all able to come at no cost. And we gave them a week of just love and resources and speakers. And so we hope to have another retreat coming. We do have one planned for this year, 2024. So I'm super excited about that.
Yeah.
And doing all of that, I think through all of my learning, God has been saying to me from the beginning, share your story, write, and people want to hear. And so I'm scared. I'm not good at that. I'm not good at social media. And I'm like, no, no. But the more I push away, it's like the more I feel like people are knocking on doors or little things are happening. I'm like, okay. And so I've just launched a weekly prayer group for moms who have lost children. And there's no expectations of those that join other than I'll say a weekly prayer. You can ask people to pray for you, or you don't even have to do anything. You can just, there's no cost. There's no sales. I'm not trying to upsell and bribe anybody. It's just a place to build community. So I'm starting that. People can jump on the wait list for that. And then I also do individual trauma coaching, which is the craziest thing because I was a counselor. My background is in social work and therapeutic foster care. Never did I think I would get back into this. So the good thing about coaching, though, is you don't have to hear the story. It's more about, like I said, how do I go forward and find meaning? And so that's where I think I have found meaning is if I can sit with somebody and help them to feel or to listen to their story that maybe no one else wants to hear. If I can sit with that mama in those darkest days where there's nobody else to be there, I can cry too.
Yeah. It's really powerful that you found a sense of beauty from the ashes, like the sacred text say, where through your pain, you've become a healer for other people. You know, and that is exactly how I look at my life too. I do what I do because of those experiences of loss. I work in end-of-life care because I've encountered deep loss. Now, I wish I still had those people. But in those moments of deep pain that we go through, we get an opportunity to help other people who are going through what we've been going through. And it looks like you're doing very well. What are your final thoughts?
I think my final thoughts is that no one should suffer pain alone. And you mentioned earlier to reach out, and I just say reach out and don't stop, because there is somebody there that is willing to listen and to walk beside you, or just, you know, I say pray with you. But, you know, a lot of times when people are grieving and there are situations, I think, like you said, prayer, and that may be the last of the things that they want. But it could be the best thing. And there's people that can pray for you, and you don't have to say a word, but just be there and share if you want to. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to sit in that pain, but I will assure you it's the most healing thing I've ever done and the most rewarding thing I've ever done. Don't suffer.
Julie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Julie Spear. She's a grief specialist. Our studio engineer is Brian Mackinder, and I'm Saul Ebema. Thank you for listening.
This show was brought to you by Hospice Chaplaincy, promoting excellence in spiritual care at the end of life. This episode was recorded at Audio Hive Podcasting in Joliet, Illinois. You can find our podcast everywhere podcasts are available. If you enjoy listening to this show, please don't forget to give us your feedback by writing a review on iTunes. For more information, please visit www.hospicechaplaincy.com.